Hello and welcome to the last in our series of podcasts for Equine Health Week 2026, which we are running in partnership with Agria. We've covered various specific health conditions across the course of this week, but today we're going to focus on something a little bit different, but no less important in terms of safeguarding the well-being of our horses. As horse owners and carers, it's our duty to ensure that our horses have the best possible lives with their essential needs at the forefront of all decision making. Getting this right can provide a stable foundation for everything we do to them, whether you've got an unridden companion, you're a happy hacker, or your horses are competing at a higher level. And our understanding of what our horses need has changed over time. And there are quite a few sort of phrases and buzzwords that are starting to pop up, and we might not necessarily know exactly what they mean. One of these is the other 23 hours. And that is our main topic for today. We're going to find out a bit more about what that means and how that ties into this idea of giving your horse what he needs and what nature intended for him. Joining me to discuss this today, first up is Rowley Owers, who is the Chief Executive of World Horse Welfare and a qualified veterinary surgeon. He plays an active role in the steering group of the British Horse Council, chairs the Equine Disease Coalition, is treasurer for the British Equine Veterinary Association, and is on the management board of the European Horse Network. And luckily, he's found time in his very busy schedule to come and speak to us today. Welcome, Rowley.
Thank you, Rachel. It's great to be here.
And joining us as well is Janet Douglas, who is also an equine veterinary surgeon and the research and education advisor at World Horse Welfare. And on top of that, she's also an honorary assistant professor at the University of Nottingham. Janet uses her experience in research, scientific writing and education to influence equine welfare, including on equestrianism's social license to operate. Welcome, Janet.
Thank you, Rachel. It's lovely to be here and many thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. We really do appreciate it. So first up, let's dive straight into it. When we are talking about the other 23 hours, what does that actually mean?
I'll take that one to start with, Rachel. I take all the easy questions and leave all the difficult ones to Janet. But the other 23 hours is very simply, when we think about riding or being with our horses, you sort of ride or train your horse often for an hour a day. And there's a lot of focus, quite rightly, when we think about welfare and training and ethical training methods and how we care and train our horses, a lot of focus is on that 1 hour. And obviously sometimes it's a bit longer than that, sometimes it's a bit less. But actually the reality is that the vast majority of the day, the horse is not in contact with people, and is not being ridden, and is free to, is in their own sort of space. So the focus around the other 23 hours is to support what we're doing, obviously, when we're riding and training them, to consider how we can give them good welfare throughout the day and not just focusing particularly on individual parts of that day.
I think that it's a really good point, actually, because as you say, we spend so much time thinking about what we're doing with them in an arena, when we're riding them, when they've got a saddle on their back or whatever. And, you know, that could also be on the floor if you've got a horse that's maybe not ridden, or you include that in their exercise program. But we don't always think about the rest of the day, and I guess that's why, well, that's what we're going to talk about today, is how we can use that time and make sure that time is meeting the needs of our horses as well. So in a perfect world, then, what should that 23 hours look like?
I'll start on this one. So a good way to think about this is Rachel talked about some sort of buzzwords and terms that are coming into the horse world, and a good way to think about it is in terms of the three F's, which we call friends, forage and freedom, and also the five domains for assessment of animal welfare. And these are concepts that are increasingly being used in the horse world. They're becoming fairly mainstream. They give us a really useful framework, I think, to think about how good a time our horses are having. So Rachel asked about in a perfect world, and I guess I'll start off by answering that. But I suppose I want to start by saying it's really, really difficult to achieve perfect, and none of us are going to achieve perfect. So even though what we might outline here is perfection, we recognize that almost none of us can achieve that. So it's more about starting from where you are now with the constraints that you might have in terms of time or space or logistics or livery yard rules or whatever, and going, right, well, this is what I'd like to achieve. So how can I move my horse from where we are now to where we'd like to be? So I guess that's how I'd like to start. So what about the three F's? So one of the F's is forage. So horses evolved to graze and browse for 24 hours a day whenever they wanted. And they're physically and physiologically and psychologically set up that that's important to them. And so we need to see the extent to which we can provide that. So ideally, a horse would have constant or near constant access to forage and a variety of forage if you can. So another concept that's really important in providing good welfare is providing horses and other animals with choice. So it's one thing to say, well, my horse has got hay for 24 hours a day, so they're fine. But actually, could we mix that up? Could we provide them with some hay, some haylage, some chaff, some straw, and just mix that up and also see if we could get some opportunity for browsing in there? So I think in terms of practicalities, if you look at the research, then you don't want a horse to be, I mean, ideally they have forage for 24 hours a day, but I wouldn't want any horse to go more than 4 hours without forage. That would kind of be my absolute cutoff. Having said that, I think we need to think about the realities of particularly things like weight. There are so many horses and ponies now that are prone to overweight, partly because of their genetics and who they are, partly the way we keep them. So there are caveats in that. There are ways you can deal with it. You can feed, you can soak hay that gets calories and sugars out. You can feed straw, which for me certainly has been a game changer. I mean, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have fed straw. I just had bought the message that it was dangerous and they'd get colic. And it's been a complete game changer for me, not just with a pony I have, but with a horse too. And you need to talk to your vet and make sure there are some animals in which straw wouldn't be ideal and it needs to be good hygienic quality. But I think straw can be a game changer. And then there's things that are thinking beyond forage. What can you do in terms of exercise? Make sure you're not over rugging. These are things that will help keep the weight down so you can provide that 24-hour forage without necessarily it leading to weight gain. So do you want to take another F, really?
Absolutely. And I think Janet makes a really good point there about what horses have evolved to do. And I think it's really helpful to think that in terms of a horse's, how they've evolved over the millennia, you know, it's over 57 million years. And we've domesticated them relatively late in that time frame. And so these sort of innate needs of horses are still quite hardwired into them. So, you know, when we talk about horses running wild, it's actually not that long ago in terms of how they've evolved over time. So that helps to keep why it's still very relevant. So the second of the three Fs is friends. And, you know, horses have naturally evolved to graze in social groups, in herds. And so socialization is a really important part of what they need and what they value in terms of having sort of a real quality of life during the day. So in an ideal world, and obviously I think Janet's talked a lot really well about that sort of, you know, let's not think of this in a binary way, you're either good or you're bad. There's all sorts of spectrums. But in the ideal world, you know, that would be with a number of horses that they get on with, and horses are individuals, and they have their own personalities. So again, with all of these, you've always got to look at what's right for your horse. But in an ideal world, they would have a social group, and they have the choice to be able to ideally make choices about who they're making friends with and get away from horses that they don't want to spend time with. And, you know, actually being able to, if you can't actually be in the same field together, then certainly at the very least have a visual sight of other animals. Ideally, it's really, if at all possible, for them to have touch, contact, to be able to groom each other, allo-groom as it's calling it. So that friends aspect of the whole 3S is really, really important. And to reiterate again, there's so much we can do in all sorts of different settings to make that possible.
Yeah, because I suppose many like modern livery yards and these conventional livery yards aren't really set up to allow that in many ways. A lot of them have individual turnout. The boxes are set up in a way that the horses, they might be able to see each other across an aisle, but they certainly can't touch each other. And I think we'll come on maybe a bit later about some of the potential solutions if that is the setup you're working with. But I think you make a very good point there, really, about different horses have a different idea of how close they want to be to other horses, and some of them are happy in a great big gang. And if that's the setup you've got, then brilliant. Whereas others like to have a bit more sort of time to themselves, but they want to have those horses nearby, we'll say, or, you know, go for the occasional little groom over the fence or something like that. So again, as Janet said, with the feeding thing, it's about knowing what your horse wants and how you can make that work for them. So we've obviously got one F left. Who's going to take it?
Okay, so the third F is freedom. And I think it's easy to think of this just in terms of freedom to move. We all think about freedom to move and run around, but it's also about freedom of choice. And we've talked a bit about choice already. So I think freedom to move. So ideally, this is the horse or pony being turned out daily, ideally 24 hours a day, but at least for a portion of the day in a space that's big enough. And I think this is kind of something I've taken from the zoo world, a space big enough for them to get up to top speed. And that's quite a big space, actually. And we don't all have access to that. And particularly at the end of a long and exceedingly wet winter. And I'm on clay here and it's just it's pretty hideous. But that's our ideal. But some access, I think it's very difficult for horses to be in a stable 24/7. And that then has knock-on effects on how they behave in hand, how they may behave ridden. So I think anything that we can do to provide exercise, and this is free exercise. So ridden exercise, like getting out of the box ridden is great, but getting out of the box with freedom to move freely is what we're talking about here, really. And then in terms of freedom to choose, really it's about allowing them to choose. So setting up, giving them an environment, whether that be in the stable or outside, where they can fix anything that's uncomfortable for them, if they can. So are they too hot? Can they cool down? Or if they're too cool, can they heat up? Can they choose what they're going to eat? So that, and the more choices we're able to give them, the more that feeds into what we call positive welfare. So the horse being, you know, welfare science has moved from thinking, well, we just need to make sure good welfare just means we're not doing that nothing bad happens to the animal, and it's moved to thinking, well, yes, of course we don't want anything bad to happen, but actually we want to be actively thinking about how we can make life positive, and horses having the ability, setting them up in an environment where they can make their own choices is part of that positive welfare.
I guess it's mental stimulation as well. If they can choose where they want to go and what they want to do, then it's providing the mental stimulation as well as, say, the physical stimulation of actually walking around a field.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that links in really nicely, because obviously the question was, you know, what does the ideal look like? What does good look like? And obviously the three S is very much the foundation of that. And I think then it's so how do you know whether, you know, what you're providing your horses is providing them with a good life? And that's where, and Janet mentioned it earlier, the five domains framework for assessing animal welfare is so helpful. And this whole area is something that, you know, our understanding from a scientific perspective, our knowledge and the evidence base for what makes a good life for horses is changing all the time. And many people listening will have heard of the five freedoms, which is something that has been so instrumental in improving animal welfare, especially in farmed animal welfare over the years since the 1960s. But the five freedoms just focuses about avoiding the negative. And what our understanding now of good welfare is, yes, avoiding the negative is really important, but so is providing the positive. So actually, we've got to give our horses good things to do and good experiences. And the five domains sort of framework for animal welfare evolves from the five freedoms, but it talks about what we call four functional domains. So it's talking about the nutrition as one of those, around physical health as a second, around the physical environment as the third, and about their behavioural interactions as a fourth. And that's with other animals, that's with people, and that's with the environment. So that's a breakdown into three. And then those four functional domains all feed into the ultimate domain, which is the mental state of the horse, because that is what defines what good welfare is. It's how the horse feels at any moment in time. And that's, you know, you've got these four influences talking about feeding into the mental state. So when we think about welfare, it's really important to think about removing the negatives, but providing the positives, but also thinking, because when so many people talk about welfare, there's a tendency, has been a tendency, to really very much think about physical aspects of welfare, which is really important. You know, veterinary care and the quality of their nutrition and such like, but it is really important. But actually, mental well-being is as, if not more, important. And thinking about their mental frame, and there are so many examples of that. But ultimately, it's, you know, we've got to look at our horse, and through something a framework like the Five Domains framework, you can then assess in an effective way. Actually, is your horse having a good quality of life? And World Horse Welfare, we'll talk about advice later on, but we've just provided some great guidance, I believe, on this. So it's helping us show what do we need to provide our horses, and then how can we tell whether what we're providing them in those other 23 hours is what they want.
And I think as part of that, it's about reading the horse. And looking at the horse's behavior and learning whether what the horse's behavior is telling you about whether they're having a good time or not. And I know how much I have learned about equine behavior and how much I still have to learn and to watch the horse and things that I just accepted. You know, previously I just thought, well, horses just do that, or I didn't even notice. And now I'm starting to notice that. He was standing quietly, and suddenly he's moving his feet. It's like he wasn't doing that before. And before, I'd have just thought, well, the horse just decided to move, didn't it? But I think learning about their behaviour is really important and fascinating.
Absolutely, it's so interesting, and this kind of does bring me on to the next area I wanted to talk about, which is the, you know, we've talked about these models that we should be using, and you know how we can assess a horse, but what signs might we see that indicate that we are kind of getting this right? What might we see in our horses while they are off doing these sort of, as I say, these 23 hours that they're spending?
Well, I'm sure Janet will come in too, but I think the first thing is to identify what is normal for your horse, because each horse has their own personality, their own way of, so I think it is much easier to know that something is wrong if you know what right looks like. So I think just a very simple thing of spending time with our horses, quietly watching them. And it's fascinating actually now, because obviously our understanding of the importance of equine sleep is growing all the time. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a lot of work being done about having sort of cameras in stables and outside overnight, and seeing how horses act when they are around people to compare to what they're doing when they're not around people is fascinating, because going back to the earlier, from an evolutionary point of view, they are a prey species, so they are very good at masking issues. Obviously the way of surviving was not showing the predator that they were injured, so they are very good at masking. So that's the first point. And then in terms of the second point, what good looks like, you can very much see through their behavior, and that's the lens we have into their welfare, into their heart of their welfare, is that they are telling you that they are communicating to us through their behavior, and that is really important. So obviously there's extreme examples, horses that are showing stereotypic behavior are clearly showing a significant level of frustration, and that is obviously a bad sign. But how, just very simply, how they are interacting with other horses, how they interact with people, is a really sort of just the initial thing of being able to have a quick assessment of how they're interacting, and whether they feel relaxed, whether they're inquisitive, and those type of things. So it really is around their behavior, understanding what normal is, and then being able to translate that into practical changes that you can make to improve that. Janet, I'm sure you can improve on that answer.
No, not at all. I just sort of thinking about some random things to add. So I think, I'll start off by picking up on Rody's point about horses' behavior. And I think the 24-hour monitoring is fascinating. So there are people now putting CCTV and cameras, CCTV cameras in stables and monitoring them 24 hours. And that really helps you. Not everybody can do it, but that's really helping people establish a baseline for each individual horse and then tell if something's different. And Roly talked about how they change their behavior with people. And Sarah Freeman at National Equine Forum just last week showed a fascinating video. So there was a horse with colic, mild colic. So a horse with severe colic, like they can't even think for the pain. But a horse with mild colic, and this horse was box walking, it was flank watching, it was getting up and down. And you could see that on the camera. And then somebody came to the door and the horse was like, up, at the door, nothing to see here. And then the people went away and off it went back with it flank watching. And that's really, I just think that's fascinating. There's so much we're going to learn from that. I think in terms of how your horse is also, you know, a nice way of assessing how happy they are with humans is, do they voluntarily come to you? If you walk into your field, do they come up to you? Do they come up to a stranger? Do they like people? Do they come to you in the stable, or do they turn around and go the other way? And I think in terms of their this is coming out a bit of a random list. And also whether they're calm and relaxed. And again, I think I know I've been guilty of thinking, well, you know, this is just kind of the way horses are. But actually, and horses are increasingly, certainly in some sports, horses are breeding horses that have stressier temperaments, and that's a real issue. But the difference between a horse that is stressed and a horse that is just calm and relaxed, it can be like night and day. So I think learning to recognize that, and that horses don't necessarily have to be just stressed. And I think another one that, again, I was guilty of missing, I talked about the fidgeting. So horses have, we say they're flight animals. You know, if they're really cornered and they have no other way out, they might fight. But horses don't fight, they flight, so they'll go. But what are the other, there are other things they do that tell you they're not happy. They freeze, and that freeze response, I think a lot of people don't recognize, and that's freeze, like, you know, they're really worried. And then that can end on an explosion, and that can be dangerous for everybody. And the other one is fidget, when they're just not happy and you think, oh, this horse is just kind of messing around. But actually they're not, they're telling you that they're stressed and they're just kind of, you know, they're fidgeting about. So I think these are all ways that we can start to learn to read our horse's behavior. And then obviously there's all the facial expression stuff, and if you look online, lots and lots of stuff will tell you about all the different things about ears, eyes, you know, chin, chewing muscles, that will tell you about your horses, that what that is telling you about how your horse feels.
Absolutely. And you both mentioned there about the studies that have been going with horses on cameras. And actually, Sarah, who Janet mentioned there, spoke to us earlier in the week about colic and actually about the study that was mentioned there. So do go back and listen to that episode, because it is really, really interesting, as again, about how that behavior can change when you factor people into the equation as well. So you will find that episode wherever it is that you found this one, or it will also be on the Equine Health Hub on our website at www.britishequestrian.org.uk. So do check that out. Now I've got my plug in there, let's return back to what we were actually talking about. I think that the key bit I'm sort of taking from what you've both said there is the importance of paying attention to our horses and those little tiny tells that show you that something isn't quite right. I mean, Janet, you mentioned there about the signs of tension in the face, and that is a really interesting area. So I do encourage people to look into that a bit more. But also, just as you say, anything that is slightly out of the ordinary that might suggest that whatever you've done, if you've made a change to their management or something like that, that might be meaning that they are a little bit less happy than they were previously. Or it could be as simple as another horse being introduced into that group or into the stable next door or something like that. So I think probably it's, as I say, paying attention to your individual horse, but also maybe making a note of things that are happening around the yard that might have influenced the status quo and how your horse is feeling, I think is really key. And I guess what we're talking about here is also going to trickle into that 24th hour of the day when you are doing the training with your horse, particularly when we talked about in terms of those five domains, the mental side of things as well. Obviously, if you're training a horse that's not in a particularly good mental state, it's probably not going to be a particularly productive session.
Definitely. And there's growing evidence around that. A paper recently that Janet notified me around, in terms of what they've came out of Cambridge University was actually just looking at different management styles and what how often horses had sort of incidents of colic, etc., etc. So there is a growing body of evidence to show that it's actually good. You know, this really does have an impact in terms of how the impact it has on the ridden horse. That is evolving, but I think there's a couple of really interesting examples. One was from Manchester Police, and these are obviously just anecdotal case studies, but indicate I think a direction of travel. The fact that they changed how the management of the Manchester Mounted Police into a more social setting. In terms of how they were stabled, and actually the police found that they were calmer and better behaved on duty. So and that was not scientific. And also there's another fascinating example from William Whittaker, and this was in a conference we had at World Horse Welfare around 2 or 3 years ago, In that, he gave a case example, and it was a high-level sport horse that was clearly agitated in the stable and was showing significant signs of frustration. And then put them into an American barn style, and so far more open sort of management of that horse. And so that those significant behavioural markers were significantly improved. So you can see the fact that if we do change how we manage our horses, as you say, Rachel, it is going to have an impact on. I think it's just logical, and there's a growing body of evidence to show that will have an impact how they are behaving and performing when we're riding them, and obviously. If you're riding at any level of competition, all of that kind of incremental gain is going to be a benefit. So it's a real win-win scenario. Obviously, primarily, we're doing it because it's what's right for the horse. And that's obviously what should be our absolute fundamental driver. But there are going to be significant benefits, both from a safety perspective, as Janet has already mentioned, but also from a performance perspective.
Yeah, and I think... So certainly the behaviourists that we work with say, you know, they're called out very often, you know, they're called out because a horse is demonstrating some kind of unwanted behaviour. And certainly what many of them have said to me is the extent to which the three Fs are in place affects how easy it is to change that behaviour, to solve that behavioural problem. And if the three Fs aren't in place, it's a lot harder for them to retrain the behavior and to get the horse into a happier place. And I think, yeah, talking about the example Rowley had about the horse that was is at William Whittaker's, the new stabling allowed the horse to touch other horses. So and I suspect that was an important part of that. And the horse was, as far as I'm aware, reported to be like was more trainable, jump and better on tour. So definite performance advantages, certainly in that example.
Yeah, it's really interesting using those real life examples. As you say, they're anecdotal, they're not necessarily from a study, but it does show how important getting this bigger picture right is for those specific end goals we might have with our horses, regardless of what level you're doing it. You know, even if you are just pootling around at home doing a schooling session or something, if you've got a horse that is happy, is in a good mental state, it's going to be far more enjoyable for both of you, far easier to maybe teach them new things than otherwise, and just generally having a nice happy time, which is at the end of the day, we just want to enjoy the time we have with our horses, and you know, the more we can do to achieve that is great.
But so there's another study I think out of France where the researchers went and looked at horses in their home environment, and this included like elite, they were all international sport horses, and some of them were going to the Olympics, and they logged the extent to which they had access to the three Fs and their behaviors, and they looked at the whole pile of unwanted behaviors like aggression towards people and stereotypic behaviors, a whole pile of stuff. Those horses that for each individual F, friends, forage, and freedom, the more access, the horses with better access to that had far fewer, I mean, way fewer abnormal behaviors. So that's not, and that wasn't in the ridden context. That was non-ridden behaviors. But there's just a growing body of evidence that this is the way we need to concentrate on this.
Absolutely. I mean, we could talk about, well, stereotypic behaviors, what were known as vices, all day, if given the chance. But as you say, that there is increasing backed up evidence that this is far more to do with sort of stress and denial of those three Fs. And, well, you know, we was used to think it was contagious, and now it's more sign that actually probably those horses are all actually having the same limitations on their forage freedom and friends. trying to get my tongue around them all there. It's a whole massive topic on its own, but I think it's a very valid point there that you bring up, Janet, that the relationship between those what have always been seen as very undesirable behaviors and these small changes we can make to how we look after our horses. I think it's time maybe we should look at a couple of actual specific examples, because as we've acknowledged throughout this podcast, we've talked about sort of the ideal, but that isn't always possible for some of us. Maybe that's to do with just how our yards are set up, or the fact that we're on a livery yard and there aren't, you know, we have limited control over the changes we can make. I don't think most livery managers would be happy if we started knocking holes in the wall of our stables, for instance, or taking fences down so that all the horses were in together. But there are going to be circumstances where there might be small little things we can do to improve those lives of the horses. So I think probably a common one that most of us are going to be experiencing at the moment is we are coming out of a very, very wet, horrible winter where horses might not have had as much access to turnout as they previously had, and they're spending more time in the stable. What are some of the things we could be doing to bring in those three Fs and maybe improve the situation our horses are in without making the big changes?
I think the first thing to my first comment there is to think about this in the long term, but then bring it back to the short term as well. So, you know, over time, you can make structural changes to stabling, and you will need to just through maintenance. So you can start to think in about how you can make those changes. And obviously, just from a stabling perspective, there's so much done around social stabling now and making changes. And, you know, you talk about knocking holes, but a lot of, you know, stables have grills between the different stables. Actually, it's not too difficult to take them down, so horses actually have the ability to groom and touch each other within the stable. So I think sometimes people think, oh my god, it's going to be thousands of pounds. Not necessarily. I think within that context is just thinking about what you can do in the short term, and I think you know, the example we made with William Whittaker, obviously they had the option to have an American barn there, and that's not going to be available to many. So we completely accept that. I think when you're thinking about freedom of movement, a really obvious one, and as Janet says, you know, we've just coming up, well, from a UK perspective at least, and in a horrific winter coming out from it. But, you know, so many facilities, stables will have riding arenas and all-weather riding arenas. Now, how those are utilised, and a lot of the day they are not. There's no one in them. So actually thinking about how we can utilise an area like that. Yes, there's all sorts of implications about maintenance, obviously poo picking and all of that kind of thing. But it is there. It's a facility. The yard that most horses are on, actually you can just close the gate and allow horses to mooch around the yard, and that's again, it's going to work for some horses and it's not going to work for others, but you know, I believe it would work for the majority. When we talk about freedom of movement, there's often this thing, oh, if I let my horse out of another horse, it's going to get kicked, it's going to get hurt. And that's a really understandable thing to do, but concern to have. But, you know, we know that there are some top level, elite level Grand Prix, top five star event riders out there who are managing their horses in exactly this way. And quite simplistically, if they can do it, we can all do it. And a horse that is in a stable 24 hours a day, yes, when you first let it out, if you let it out, let them out, sorry, they might sort of have that burst of energy. But the more they're used to it, the more it's part of their natural sort of management system, the more relaxed they will be, and the less risk that there will be too. So I think it's a matter of incremental gains. As Janet mentioned at the beginning, this is not, you know, you either pass or fail. You can either do it or you can't. Every little step we can make adds up over time, because remember, we're talking about the other 23 hours, we're talking about 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and if you think of those all adding up, makes a big, big difference. So don't be defeated by it. We can all make a little bit of change.
Absolutely. There's everyone's call to action and positive spin on their morning. No, I think you're right, really, in terms of also maybe making those changes slowly. If it is a case of, say, introducing your horse to a new friend, or, you know, moving them from an individual turnout setup to one where they're maybe out with other horses, doing it slowly, paying attention to what your horse is telling you, incremental changes to get us to that point that we want to be at. And I think one other quite probably good example that ties into this, Emily King posted on her social media a while back about, she's one who very much believes in horses having sort of paired or group turnout, but she had one horse that for various reasons couldn't go out with another horse. He was a very shy horse. He didn't really feel comfortable until they found him a little mule who actually got on with him. And it was a case that the personalities meshed. And now she's seeing, you know, he seems a much happier horse because he's got a friend, to the degree she's actually been able to introduce a third horse into their mix, which I think, again, is a very nice story. And it kind of ties into what we've been saying about how, you know, it's meshing the personalities, I think, and paying attention to your individual horse.
I think if we just add about, so Ronnie's talked about, we were talking about freedom to move, but I think another obvious one, this isn't really freedom to move, but it's at least getting out of the box and stretching your legs. It's just going for a walk in hand. And then that allows them also, you could make that a grazing opportunity. You know, the grasses and herbs are coming on the verges now. Mine have figured out that the cow parsley is coming. And I have a friend who goes on sort of what you call snack hacks, which is presumably a hack where the horse is allowed to stop and have to eat whatever they want. But you can have sort of, you know, snack walks or whatever. So even that's an opportunity to get them out of the box. And I think maybe this is slightly off topic, but thinking about the horse of Emily King's you were talking about, I think increasingly people are aware of the importance of weaning well and of early socialization. And I think there are many horses who, if they're not weaned well and they're not socialized early, then it makes them that much. And these are probably the horses that do find it really difficult to be out in a group because they just haven't learned the social skills. So a bit of a plug for anybody who's breeding or bringing up young horses, just to sort of think about that and giving them, you know, like sending your children on a play date. They need to learn.
Absolutely. Which actually, again, I can do a little plug here. If you listen back to our episodes last Equine Health Week, where we talked about the life cycle of the horse, Brad Hill did a really interesting episode all about the weaning process and how we can get those sort of early building blocks in terms of socializing our horses and hopefully giving them a nice long life where they're able to, you know, interact with other horses and just generally set them up for success in terms of their kind of mental state, which is really interesting. So I recommend listening to that. As with the other ones I've mentioned, you will find it wherever you found this episode.
And I think we've obviously touched on, in terms of practical applications in everyday situations, I think we've touched a bit on freedom, or we touched a bit on friends. I mean, around forage, is also, and Janet mentioned this earlier, there's all sorts of things that we can be thinking of about the variety that Janet mentioned, you know, obviously about, you know, the very simple one about trickle hay nets, for them to take longer to be able to eat the hay, to put the hay nets in different places. So there's a different that the horses are looking at there. Different types of forage balls, straw beds, as we've already talked about. So there's lots of stuff there within that whole forage area, that just with a little bit of lateral thinking, we can create a lot more variety than putting up the hay net once a day and doing this in a sort of very monotonous way, and to create some real interest for our horses in all sorts of different environments.
Absolutely. And by doing that, hopefully you also might make it last a bit longer, which ties into what Janet was saying at the start about making sure they've got forage for as much of the day as possible and not leaving them for long periods without it. So if that is a case of, you know, they start off the day with a hay net and a bit later on they have something else put in, then again, it just spreads that forage throughout the day without hopefully doing too much in terms of weight gain, because they've just got giant hay nets going in.
Could I come back to, we were talking about giving them the chance, earlier we were talking about giving them the chance, so you've got a stabled horse and giving them the chance to interact with other horses. And the fact that certainly in the short term, you probably can't change your stable infrastructure. But, and Roni talked about turning horses out on yards, but you can also just do that with one or within a barn. So, you know, thinking about horses that are on box rest, that's a really, really tough one. And there's some things you can do there. But just letting one horse, if you can do it, loose or tie another horse up outside the box such that they can interact over the stable door. And then that is safe. They're both safe. They can both get away, but they can choose to interact. And that just gives that stabled horse or that box rested horse the chance to interact physically with another horse, which is really important.
Absolutely. And I guess probably it's best to pick there, if they have got a field mate or a favoured friend or something like that, choosing maybe that one, because that's the one probably they're missing the most, but also then they might feel more comfortable with that one coming up while they're in an enclosed space. For instance, I know, you know, for instance, my horse isn't a fan of horses particularly coming into her space over her door. But if it's ones that she's turned out with, then it's a little bit more OK than if it's a strange one or one that she's not normally turned out with.
Definitely.
So, again, it's coming back to knowing your individual horse and how they are and what they want to do. If we had to pick maybe a takeaway moment from each of you from what we've discussed today, because we've talked about quite a lot of different things, what would be the one piece of information that you'd want people to take away from this conversation, to have in their head and think about for the rest of the day and hopefully beyond that?
There's a question. To me, I think it's all about listening to our horses. It's all about equine behavior. Your horse will be able to tell you how they are feeling. They've always done it. We're just not always so good at reading what they're trying to tell us. So I think for me, just spend time with your horse and pony and mule understand what normal is, and then evolve your understanding of what how they are communicating with you and what those subtle signs. And I think if people can really take that away, it really will help them as a building block to say, is my horse happy? And if on any particular day, and like people, they have good days and not so good days, you know, and where they're not so happy, to try and unpick about why that might be and what practical changes we can make to make them happier.
And Janet?
Maybe similar to Roly's, but I think it would be to actively look for things you can do that are likely to provide positive welfare for your horse. So things that will actively give them engagement and enrichment and happiness. And there's tons of stuff online. You know, there's this really sort of burgeoning field. And I do sometimes think, I listen to some people and I think, well, actually, I could probably spend my life doing nothing other than making frozen vegetable fruit juice treats for my horses and putting them out and hanging things up. And I don't. But there are lots of ideas online. And I think thinking about, you know, more than just not doing the negative, but actively providing the positive in all the ways that we've talked about and many more than that, I think that's the mind shift that I think we should all be heading for.
Fabulous. Thank you very much. And you mentioned there about resources and information out there, Janet. Have you got any particular ones that you feel people should go and have a look at? I mean, really, as well, you mentioned at the start about the tool with the five domains.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, other advice is available, but World Source Welfare, we have provided a lot of information here. We've run a Horses Explained video series that pulls some of what we talked about today with experts in really practical ways. Since 2020, we've run webinars on all sorts of aspects, both physical and mental well-being of our horses, and that's all on the World Horse Welfare Education channel. And then the team have done a brilliant job of overhauling our advice pages and very much embedded human behaviour change as part of that. So really trying to understand how we can encourage us all to change our behaviour to the benefit of our horses. And there's a lot of horse management essentials and information around the three F's there. And I was just thinking earlier, people often talk about the four F's, where the fourth F is fun. Because actually, it's really just to show that we're driving to try and give our horses, as Janet says, positive welfare. But Janet, you might want to mention something about looking outside the horse world too.
Yeah, absolutely. So the World Horse Welfare resources are super, are really good, and all the other point is that all our education resources are run past industry experts, which I think is so that there are other cracking resources out there, but I just feel that we can stand behind ours, but there are many other good equine sources. But exploring I've done, I've been really taken in recent years by listening particularly to people from the zoo world, and what people have, there's some really good thinking going on in the zoo world and that I think we can learn from. And two of the people that I've heard speak that have really captured my imagination are there's a guy called Jake Veazey, and he has, so there's a podcast called Changing Rain, which I would recommend anybody listen to. There's loads of episodes. They're without exception really good and interesting. They're quite long. I think Jake Veazey has two episodes on that podcast, but I found them fascinating. And also there's a guy called Rick Hester, who's at a zoo in Colorado, and he spoke at the ICES conference last year, International Society for Equitation Science, in 2025, and did something called the Clever Hans Lecture. And I think, I might not be right, but I think that's available free online for non-members. And that was really good. And then World Horse Welfare invited him to our conference, and he spoke virtually at our conference in 2025, and that is available free online. And that was a shorter presentation, but just exploring, what other people from other disciplines can bring to us, because the horse world can be quite traditional, and I think there's lots of excellent knowledge and thinking from outside of that. So I would go and listen to the zoo people.
Absolutely, that's really interesting, Janet. And I think because the zoos are so good at the enrichment side of things, whenever you go to them, they're always at doing activities and things for the animals, whether that's spraying perfume around the tiger enclosures or things like that. They've always got some very interesting toys and things going on as well. So I think that's, it's really interesting to bring that maybe through to our horse world and use the knowledge from elsewhere and bring it in and make use of it. Absolutely.
But also in terms of things like cooperative care, which is basically training animals such that they can say yes or no to their own care. And I mean, I'm a vet, and I, I've had to do things to horses that really weren't any fun for the horse. And the idea that, I mean, I saw a video the other day of a vet taking a tooth out of a marine mammal, a dolphin or something, and the dolphin just came up, and I think there was local anesthetic involved, but came up and offered its mouth and had the tooth taken out. I mean, like, how, that's a level of cooperation from the animal that is quite rare in the horse world, and it's coming and it's growing and the education is there. But I just, I just think we have a lot. I have a lot to learn.
So. No, you're so right. So I tried to try not to go too much on topic, but I've seen it as well with, it's really interesting. And I see I saw an episode of, I think it was Animal Park that they do at Longley, where they, with the giraffe, and the giraffe had a foot problem and they taught it to put its foot on the box and let them rasp it and things like that. As you say, it's something that we don't always think about in the horse world, but it in terms of welfare can be really, really key, giving the horses a bit more choice. Again, coming back to that freedoms idea, that freedom of choice.
And that all links in, what that all links into is, you can only do that if you understand how these different species learn. And I think there's another whole area about how horses learn. Our understanding of that is growing all the time. That's a real bedrock here as well. But obviously that's getting far more into the training and riding, but not just. I think it's fascinating and something that we can all just spend a bit of time on and getting to understand more.
Absolutely. I think that's probably a future episode we're going to have to touch on, is that whole equine learning theory. And as Rowley's brought it up, he's going to be top of my list when we eventually get to it. So, consider this your future warning, people, that one day we will talk about equine learning theory, because it is really, really interesting. Right. We're sort of venturing further off topic. So let's bring it back into what we've been talking about today. As we kind of wrap up this conversation, is there anything you feel maybe that we haven't touched on or is worth just reiterating before we close up?
Well, I'm sure we haven't touched on lots, but I think all are coming back. Every single person, all of us, can make changes in whatever management situation you're in. And we completely appreciate in many livery yards and settings, it can be quite restrictive. And we've just had a horrible winter. Don't get disheartened. You can make little incremental changes and it really will have an impact.
And I think following on from that, once you've done, you know, it can seem really daunting to take on change, and it's difficult to take on change. But if you do one little thing and get that, so that's a habit, then that becomes part of your routine. And then, you know, a month or so later or whatever, then you can add in another little thing. And by the time you've got to the end of a year, actually, you've done quite a lot for your horse that you weren't doing at the beginning. So it's about making it reasonable and kind of doable for you too. And not beating yourself up if you can't do it all, because we can't.
Absolutely. As I say, small positive changes. There's our homework, people, and our goals for the year. Brilliant. Well, thank you both very much. This has been a really interesting episode. As I say, it's been a little different to some of the other offerings we've had this week. But I think it's given everyone some real food for thought, hopefully. And it's a really important topic. It's a growing topic. It's becoming far more part of our general discussions within the industry as horse owners. So hopefully, yeah, everyone's got some bits they can take away from this, and it's given them something to think about. So thank you both very much.
Thank you for the invitation.
And thank you everyone at home for listening as well. We hope you have enjoyed it. If you've missed any of the episodes that we've put out this week for Equine Health Week, you can find them wherever it is that you get your podcasts, or as I mentioned earlier, everything we have shared this week, all the resources, all the podcast episodes, all the graphics, everything else, you will find them on our website on the Equine Health Week Hub, which you can find if you go to our website, which is www.britishequestrian.org.uk. There will be a banner at the top of the page, or you can go to the Equine tab and you will find things there. Do check them out if you've missed anything at all. There've been some really, really interesting things, really interesting podcast discussions with a whole range of experts. And lots of bits and pieces that you can find online if you want to find out about any more of the topics we have talked about. Thank you everyone for listening and for joining us today and for joining us in Equine Health Week, and we hope you'll join us again soon.